Today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, on this Rosh Chodesh of Tavshin Pei Vav, waiting with great excitement for Nisim and Niflaos to be completed by Tisha B'Av. And that way, I mean, we certainly want to have things finished in time to prevent fasting and to have instead some holidays. And if Richie actually manages to beat us, we'll even have some very nice things to drink. And we start today on the next sugya, which is actually, if you think about it, the perfect continuation for exactly what we've been learning. So remember when we started the parak, we pointed out that Behema HaBekasha is not an interruption to Eloh Trefas. It's smack bang in the middle of Eloh Trefas, except we move to a long parak about legs. And we start off with the more fundamental tarfas, where the leg per se is a trefa because of the fact that it's not in the womb. Then we don't have to talk about the organic structure of the leg or anything else. So that's the first part of the parak, which discusses the issues of extended legs during birth, which led us to all of the other issues that had to do with Ben Bekua and 8-month-old and the dinim of Trefus and the dinim of Aver Min Achai, or whether Shechita Zoysa Nipul or Misa Zoysa Nipul, which led us to the discussion of Aver HaMeduldal. This was all part of the same continued focus on that opening of a leg that is sticking out of a womb. Mispresentations we got onto. Meanwhile, we talked about what the din would be legabe bechor, and what the din would be legabe opinion of a peter chamor, and all kinds of issues. But they were all basically focused on that opening mishnah about a mispresented birth in which the leg or the arm, so to speak, came out. Now we want to talk about the actual legs, not arms. Not births, but physical defects of the leg. Now, I'd appreciate very much if somebody, especially if that somebody would be at the Akiva Bed and Breakfast, if perhaps he would be able to put up, or sometimes, I don't see, unfortunately, Alon today. So I guess Akiva...
Alon is guided.
He's misguided. Because it's time for Daf Yomi. So anyway, so Akiva, bed and breakfast, if you don't mind, perhaps you could put up a nice photo of one of the books that show the details of the leg of the animal. Okay, but what I'd like to point out to you, you know what I'm going to actually do, is I am going to send you a picture. And, oh, gosh. I guess I'm not. Oh, wait a minute. I can use my phone. My computer updated overnight, so there's nothing up. That's why I was a little late trying to get Zoom up. Hold on 1 second, but I can get it off of my phone. So where are we? We are? Yeah. So I am sending you a picture of a camel. And that's for a very good reason, as you shall see. Okay. Now, if you take a look at the pictures that were just sent by the Akiva and by Moshe Handel, thank you, all of you, you will notice that the animal's foot, this is extremely important to understand because it's very confusing. A cow's foot is actually just a foot. It is not a leg. Take a look at the picture of the camel that I sent. Now, a camel basically is like a human bent over. And you can see the thigh of the camel, the leg of the camel, and the foot of the camel. Now, don't confuse the foot of the camel with that little piece on the ground, which is the hoof of the camel. Because where is the heel of the camel? You see? What you're looking at is basically the evolutionary equivalent of a human foot that has gotten elongated so that what would have been the ankle directly above the heel looks like the knee, you see? So that bottom piece is just a foot. The hoof is the toes of that foot, in human terms. The bones can be actually extrapolated exactly. You put a human foot next to this foot. Take a look at the skeleton of the human and the skeleton of the camel, and you will see the same bones in both structures, but they've been changed in the sense of elongated, very elongated. And that first thing that looks like a knee is actually an ankle with the heel directly under it, you see? And that's very important to realize, because even though it's called an arkuva in the Gemara, and an arkuva means a knee, it's not the knee. Let's take a look at where the knee is on that camel. Make it bigger, make the picture bigger. And then you can see that as it goes all the way up its side, it hits that strange-looking piece, which is the kneecap. And that's the skin directly over the kneecap. And then it's got the thigh going all the way up to the hip bone on top of that, you see? I don't know if you can, is it possible to hear things over Zoom? Because sometimes when you sing to it, it doesn't pick it up. So I'll try. Let's see if we can get this. Oh, heck. It's because it shut down my computer. I lost it. But you remember that old song that they did in Rain Man? The hip bones connected to the... You remember that song? And it's... I had that up. It was really cute. So it actually is a great way to remember. Let me see if I can get it up again. So weird. Yeah, so they call it dry bones. Can you hear anything? Anyway, you get the idea. So it's a great way to remember. And looking at the picture, what you can see very clearly is that on the camel, it's easy to see this, and the Gemara is actually going to use the camel as a reference, as we're going to see, because there you know what you're looking at. When you're looking at a cow, the only thing that you see is what you think is the cow's leg, which is actually the cow's foot. So it's very confusing, because the rest of the leg and the thigh, all of those things are so completely covered by musculature in the cow that they seem to be invisible on the surface. You can make out the bones a little bit as it walks and so on. But a cow looks like all it's walking on is its foot. And it's easy to make a mistake and think that that foot is its leg. So let's get the way that the Gemara refers to these different parts. Now, as you know, The actual joint that what we're referring over here in the Gemara, what is called the arkuva, is sometimes, which is a knee, is sometimes actually called the arkuva hatachtona. I see we just got another picture. Let's see. Okay, here. So it's called the arkuva HaTachtona. The Arkuva HaTachtona, its technical name, is the same as the name of the ankle bone in the human, which is the tarsus. Now, that connection itself, the ankle connection, is extremely complex. It has a lot of different bones in it. And as you know, those are the, you can get a lot of problems in ankles that are, wow, take a lot of surgical expertise to be able to deal with. And it's a complex structure which allows that movement. And in the cow, it has right connected to it, around it, and we're going to talk about exactly where, what is known as the tzomet hagidim. Now, the tzomet hagidim are the three very thick, large sinews that are tendons, and they connect the muscles of that are above it in that part that is really so thick that we don't even see the actual leg. They connect the muscles to the foot, which here looks like a leg, and move it. Now, if those tendons at that point where they all converge, and the Gemara is going to define what the convergent area is, if that is cut, then it's considered to be a trefa. And this was the case that we kept talking about before when we said, stop being naive and don't compare one type of trefa to another type of trefa, because you can cut it here and it won't hurt it, and you can cut it in a place where it seems to be much less damaging and it will hurt it. You'll remember that, right? So, ein omrim betrefot ze doma leze. You never say such a thing because everything is extremely specific. So the Gemara is going to have to go into the extreme details about where this tzomes hagidin is. Now let's get our terminology correct. So that ankle, the ankle bone, which is called the tarsus, which is called the arkuva hatachtona, or the arkuva hanimkeret im harosh, because generally they would just slice off this lower piece. There's almost nothing to do with it unless you want to make some pacha, some animal pacha, so you could turn it into gelatin. But basically, there's nothing much to do it, and they would sell it. And they just give it together with the head. Anybody wants to buy the head of the animal would get this thrown in. So it's called the arkuva hanimkeret im harosh. So again, it's got all of these different names. It's the arkuva hatachtona, the arkuva hanimkeret im harosh. It's basically the ankle, which is called the tarsus technically, and that's where the tzomes hagidim is. Now there's also the normal knee. And that's called the arkuva elyona, but it's invisible in that cow, but very visible in that camel, as you can see, and very visible in those humans. And then that's called the arkuva elyona. Now, the bone which goes between those two, the arkuva elyona and the arkuva tachtona, that's what we call the shok. That is the tibia. That is what people call the leg. Right? So that's between the arkuva tachtona and the arkuva heliona. Above that, you have the thigh bone, which is that serious femur bone, which so many people unfortunately need to have in falls, need to have replaced, and so on, which connects to the pelvis. And that is connected in that's through the Buka de Atma, which gave us the whole Buka de Atma Shaf Biduchte song, which Naftali once again avoids taking credit for it together. But at least we've got one of the Mandelbergs handy so they can say things over to Abba later. Anyway, moving on with understanding that, let's talk about the different types of things that can happen to these bones. So you could damage the actual tzomes hagidim directly, and that would not necessarily entail a damage to the bone. It's also possible to damage the bone directly without damaging the actual tzomes hagidim. And that opens up the door to different type of trefas or aver medulda. And in order to understand how an aver medulda would get involved over here, we need to understand the concept of a compound fracture. No, a compound fracture does not mean a double fracture, as people think. A compound fracture means a fracture where the bone itself is exposed and has popped through the skin. So that type of compound fracture, as we're going to see in the Gemara, is considered to be irreparable in certain cases. And in that event, it would mean that the organ that had that broken, let's say it's a broken leg, if it was a compound fracture, then we view it as an Eivar HaMeduldal, because we're not going to be able to properly, and this is why they shoot horses, as you know, it's almost impossible to deal with those kind of things on four-legged animals with their rear legs. So because of that, we're going to have to talk about also getting back into the sugya of the Eivar HaMeduldal. Okay, so let's talk about the very unclear Mishnah, because the Mishnah does not define its terms properly, and it leaves it up to us to figure out whether we're talking about the Arkuva Elyona, which is the actual knee, or the Arkuva Tachtona, which is the tarsus and is essentially an ankle. So if you cut an animal's legs, so this, you see how this is right back where we were. We started the perek as a continuation of Eilat Treifas, where we had the legs. We didn't have to do anything physical damage to the legs because we were talking about a case where they were treifas by simple virtue of the fact that they were sticking out of the womb, with the more primal idea of treifa, which is the basar besod. It's not within its mechitza. Now we're moving on to the typical understanding of the word treifa, which is things that were actually damaged. And here we had the legs were cut from the arkuva down. We don't know which arkuva this is referring to, but we'll talk about it, of course, in the Gemara. It's kosher. But if they were cut above the arkuva, then it's treifa. And we're going to see whether this is because of the somatagidim problem. Is it a problem in the bone? All to be understood. The same exact thing would be true if the Tzomet HaGidim was itself taken away. It would also be a treifa. If the bone was nishbar, and it's talking, as we're going to see in the Gemara, about a compound fracture, not just a break in the bone, but the bone actually penetrated through the surrounding muscle and skin. So if it was nishbar ha'etzem, Im rov habasar kayam. So if most of the muscle around that bone, the Gemara will discuss what do we mean by most. If most of the muscle around the bone is still there, then the aver that bone is attached to is considered to still be part of the animal, and it will be tohar through the shrita of the animal. But if most of it is not there, then the shechita is not metayer it because it's considered to be a Eivar HaMeduldal. And we learned before that an Eivar HaMeduldal is merumas in basar besoda trefa lo tochelu, that extra, we were medayek v'basar, is telling me that it's aser. Now, in the end, this is understood before. Ein bo ela mitzvah parosh bi'alma. Remember, it's really only a derabanan, and we came out that if you eat it, you're not going to be chayim, and the rabbanan were the ones who made it a din of as if it's an Eivar Menachai, but mi'ikar adin the halacha is that the shechita is not osa nipo, and the shechita will actually be metayer, mini raisa, will be metayer, even an Eivar HaMeduldal, in which case the Gemara over here is making reference to the lima that we had before, but it doesn't really mean that it's not metayer it at all. Okay, so now the question is, what are we talking about? When we say above the arkuva, beneath the arkuva, which arkuva, how much above, what are we talking about? I mean, these are very, very exact kind of problems, as we'll see, and you're leaving them wide open to interpretation. Omer Rav Yehuda, Omer Rav, Omer Rabbi Chiya. When we say lamata in the Mishnah, we mean lamata, immediately beneath the actual tarsus. Well, I shouldn't say which bone. We'll see which bone we're talking about. Immediately beneath that arkuva. And when we say above, we mean immediately above. So that means anywhere above, it is usher, and anywhere below, it is kosher. And basically, we've got that point, which is the definitive, that's the tipping point. And which arkuva are we talking about? Be'ezo arkuva? We are talking about the arkuva hanimkeret im harosh, which means that it's actually the ankle bone. It's actually the tarsus. It looks like a knee, but it isn't really a knee. So therefore, if you cut off the leg underneath that ankle bone, that tarsus bone, it's kosher. But if it's actually above, then it's trefa. That is the first pshat that we have in the Mishnah, and that is Rav's quote of Rabbi Chiya. Ula says, what Rav Hoshaya said about the Mishnah is the exact opposite. It is the bone which you can see on the camel. Kenegdo begamal nikar. It's the knee that is obviously a knee on a camel, which you'll miss on a cow, which is why I sent you that picture of the camel where it's very bolate. You can see exactly where the knee is. And actually, it's always very dirty and everything. It's very easy to see on the camel. It's always rubbed off and so on. So the kenegdo begamal nikar, that's because when the camel bends and it sits down, it always gets that knee into the dirt. So kenegdo begamal nikar, and what it's referring to is not the ankle bone, not the tarsus bone, it's referring to the knee joint, the patella, the knee joint. So what it means is if you cut off the leg underneath the knee joint, then it's kosher. That means even if you cut off the leg and it was literally amputated, the entire leg was amputated, which, wow, okay. So this animal actually has no leg, and that's the tibia. It doesn't matter. As long as it wasn't above that knee, it would be kosher. So this is an extremely wide machlokas, right? Now, that would mean that according to Rav Hoshaya, we're nowhere near the Tzomet Haginim, because the Tzomet Haginim is on the ankle. And this, he's talking about the knee. And therefore, he's referring to a question about the bone amputation and not about the Tzomet Haginim. So, Omar le'Ula l'Rav Yehuda, so Ula, who had quoted Rav Hoshaya, says to Rav Yehuda, who was quoting Rav, look, I mean, come on. Bishlam el-Didi. I mean, the Mishnah makes so much more sense according to Rav Hoshaya's approach. I'm saying that we're talking about the actual knee, which you can see on a camel and you can't really see on a cow. So Bishlam el-Didi, according to me, who's talking about the actual knee, and I say Kinegdo b'jamal is nikar. That's why the Mishnah has the next piece. Or if the Tzomet Haginim was cut. Oh, okay, so there's two completely different things. If you completely amputated the leg, and that would only be if you amputated it above the knee, that would be one way of making it a trefa. But if you amputated the leg somewhere else, and let's say you actually had cut through any of the other parts, it would be okay. Therefore, we need to add. But, hold on a minute, one other thing you got to look at, besides the amputation, is the question of whether the Tzomet Haginim was hurt. If it was Nito Tzomet Haginim, and it actually was right through the Tzomet Haginim, so then it would be puzzled. That's something else. So I need to explain that there's two different things. There's the question of the din of the bone, and that's only above the knee. And then we have a different halacha, that even if it was cut all the way down at the bottom, but it went through the Tzomet Haginim, then it's a problem for another reason. And as we're going to use this as the example that we always do, you're right. It's counterintuitive to say that if you do an amputation anywhere along the leg, you cut off the whole leg, it's not a problem. But if you cut through the area of the Tzomet HaGidim, which is all the way on the bottom at the ankle, that is a problem. So what? That's exactly our proof. Ein omrim betreifa. You don't use your intuition when it comes to treifa. It's entirely it's the same thing that we had with the spleen. You cut out the entire spleen, it's not a problem. You cut through the spleen, or there's the blood is dripping out of the spleen, then it is a problem. Okay, the same thing is true over here. You cut off the whole leg in amputation, including the whole Tzomet HaGidim with it, no problem. You cut through the Tzomet HaGidim, big problem. Okay, so we have two completely different things. And I say that's the 2 points in the Mishnah, but according to you, what in the world, what are the 2 points? What do you mean, v'chein shenita Tzomet HaGidim? When you said that you cut directly above the arkuva hatachtona nimkeret mimarosh, that means you're cutting to the Tzomet HaGidim. And that's exactly what it's saying. So why are we mentioning again as a separate issue v'chein shenita Tzomet HaGidim? I don't understand what the Mishnah means according to you. Says Rav Yudah, what's so hard to understand? It's very simple. If the Mishnah is talking about the din of the bone, the damage to the bone without hitting the Tzomet HaGidim. So it could be either way. We're identifying the place that you're cutting it on the bone of the as it relates to the tarsus bone, above or below. So you can have a treifa from an arkuva without hurting the Tzomet HaGidim, or you could damage the Tzomet HaGidim and the bone is still whole. So I don't understand what your problem is. Says Ula, no, because then it would have said damage, but it says mechtechu. It says over here, if you cut it, you cut through the joint, is what you said. That makes it a treifa. So what do you mean cutting it just means you cut the bone? It says you cut the leg, which means that you cut through the Tzomet HaGidim. So Rav Yudah didn't have what to answer. And then, as usual, people always figure out what they should have said after the other person leaves. And sure enough, after Ula walks out, Rav Yudah says, damn, why didn't I tell him I had such a simple answer? My time alo amrele, I should have just said that when the Mishnah says lamata, what it means is lamata min ha'arkuva and the Tzomet HaGidim. And lamala means not lamala anywhere above. It means lamala mitzomet hagidim. That's what it was saying. So that even if the tzomet hagidim itself was not cut through, and if you amputated above, it's higher up where it's above the tzomet hagidim, it would be pasul because of the amputation, because of the bone, and not because of the tzomet hagidim. So it's two completely different things. So one, you are asking me, but when it says it was cut, it means it was cut at the Tzomet HaGidim. No, it doesn't. It means it was cut above the Tzomet HaGidim, so that the Lamata was directly below, and the Lamala means directly above the Tzomet HaGidim, not above the Tarsus. So it's two different things. Then Reb Yudah said, it's a good thing I didn't tell him. He's such a stubborn guy. I mean, I tried to give him a good answer. Didn't I tell him, v'lo amrilei, I gave him a very, very intelligent answer, you know, that one was talking about damage to the bone without damage to the Tzomet HaGidim, and the other one was damage to the Tzomet HaGidim without damage to the bone, and he laughed it off, and he said, well, that's not what it says. It says nechtechu. So this is a tough customer. If I would have told him that, you know, he would have said the same thing. There he answered me, well, that's not what it says. It says nechtechu katani. He would have told me the same thing. Don't say to me that when it says lamala, it means lamala min arkuva and the Tzomet HaGidim. He would have said, that's not what it says. It says min arkuva lamala. Can't you read? He just would have made fun of me. So it's a good thing I didn't tell him the answer. Rav Papa has a different details about the shita of Rabbi Chia that Rav Yudah ultimately was saying over. And that goes like this. When the Mishnah says lamata, it means lamata min arkuva, not referring to the actual, according to this, we're talking about the Arkuva we're talking about over here, where it's all the way up on the thigh. So that what we're referring to is when it says Lamata, it means way Lamata. So it means Lamata min Arkuva, Umitzomet Agidim. Lamala means Lamala min Arkuva, Umitzomet Agidim. And over here, I agree with you that the Arkuva that we're referring to over here of the above is a reference literally to the Yorech. It's talking about the thigh bone. And therefore, what the Mishnah is saying is that if you cut anywhere along the bone, which is the actual, the leg, it's two completely different things. Sometimes I'm agreeing with you about where we're talking about is the Arkuva, not the Arkuva Nimkeret Min HaRosh. So therefore, it's saying anywhere that you cut it on that leg or above it, even anywhere, or you cut it completely, you either would cut it there by the Tzomet Agidim, or you would cut it on the thigh, it would actually be a trefa. But the Mishnah has not even talked about the what we were calling in the song over there, the shank bone. It hasn't been didn't mention the leg at all. And then it says, also, if you did something entirely different, which was Shenita Tzomes Hagidim. Now, what I was talking about in the first part was not referring to the Arkuva that was Nimkeretim Arosh. The Arkuva Gufa, I agree. According to this, Rav Papa, according to this, there was no difference between Ula Amar Rav Hoshaya and the identification of which Arkuva. So the Arkuva Gufa was also a reference to the Arkuva Elyona, which is the patella bone. So that means in this, in Rav Papa's version, Ula and Rav Yehuda agreed that if you would cut the actual shank bone, the leg, if you would cut it at the bottom, at the Tzomes Hagidim, it's Shreifa. But anywhere above that, it's kosher. Unless you're cutting it in the thigh. What? Umiika mide? Does it make sense to say that if you cut off a leg, you amputate a leg? You said the leg can be cut as long as the Tzomes Hagidim isn't cut and as long as the thigh isn't cut. And that, well, basically what you're saying is that if you cut something all the way up before the thigh, it's fine. But if you cut it all the way down where it's next to the Tzomes Hagidim, that then it's going to die? That doesn't make sense. Amar Rav Ashi, to whom doesn't it make sense? To your brilliant intuition, which you know absolutely nothing about the way that it works? What are you, an idiot? So now you're coming to tell me the way you think animals should work, you know. Well, if I made a cow, this is how I would make a cow. That's about as intelligent as the people who say, if I created the world, this is how I would have created the world. I would never have done it stupidly the way it is created. Okay, thank you very much. Ein omrim betrefot zo doma lazo. You don't use intuition when it comes to organic reality. Hare chotcha mikan v'meta, chotcha mikan v'chaya. This is something that is all over trefus, and that's exactly the point. You cut it all the way up next to the thigh, no problemo. You cut it all the way down at the bottom next to the Tzomes Hagidim, which is all the way by the bone that we would call an ankle bone, a tarsus, and then it's trefa. That's crazy. Well, that's the way the world grows, and that's the way the tarsus crumbles. So chotcha mikan v'choya. Okay, so now we have these three different shitas. We now understand the meaning of the arkuva and what it might mean. Now let's talk about what exactly is meant by the Tzomes Hagidim. Ve'elu hein Tzomes Hagidim. So, this is a very long daf, and because of that, I'm not going to torture you, and I guess we'll have to do the Tzomes Hagidim as an extra to add to this daf. Okay, so we required quite a bit of introduction besides finishing up yesterday's daf. So I'm sorry, this is a very long daf, but hopefully we'll be able to get through the Tzomes Hagidim quickly, and I apologize. Okay, everybody, we'll somehow make it up. But what we did do today was pretty amazing stuff. We took a look at all of the possibilities of Reb Shimon Shazuri. We looked into the business opportunities of creating kosher meat that didn't require any shechita, which would have meant we could have absolved ourselves of a lot of the kashrus problems. That was dependent on whether we could have Reb Shimon Shazuri extending into future generations as long as both parents all the way down the line were Ben Bekuas, and it would be going according to the Tanakhama, not according to Rabbi Meir. And we talked about the way that people always remember weird things, and therefore the Tanakhama would agree to cases where there was also a mutation or where there was a dual mutation, both of the mother and the child. We went through the structure of the leg on the cow, structure of the leg on the camel, and the way that it compares to the human bones so that we can identify the various parts that we're talking about. And we went through the three shitas of how to understand the Arkuva and its relationship to the Tzomas Hagidim when it comes to this very precise problem, which has so many different shitas and, in fact, ends up being a tremendous chumrah because of the fact that we can't identify precisely. We'll talk about that. We were learning Elo Treifas. We moved on from Elo Treifas into a more primal kind of treifa, and that was the treifa of Basar Shiyatzeh Chutzel Mechitzato, and therefore we started talking about Ubarim. Talking about Ubarim, in which various organs were put out of the womb, and therefore they became treifa, and that led us to the discussion of what would be the din when it came to the issues of Evarim HaMeduldalim, which related very much to the overall fundamental question of whether Shechitas Osa Nipul, Misas Osa Nipul. From there, we went back to the actual legs, not to the legs that went out and were possible because of Yotzeh Chutzeh Mechitzaso, but actual problems in the legs. So we're in the middle, really, of a sugya, complex sugya that involves equally all of the dinim of Ubarim and the din of Evarim Meduldalim and legs in general. So we're focused now on the actual legs, and what we were talking about were the various parts of the leg in this Mishnah. And again, just to remind you, we have that lower bone, which is almost no muscle on it at all. It's all skin and bone, and it's basically the foot. And it is run by these very powerful tendons that are connected to muscles in the leg, and they pass through what is the equivalent of the human ankle. They pass through, that's called the same name in the animal as it is in the human, it's called the tarsus. And these very powerful tendons move that bone, but it doesn't have very much of its own musculature. And they go through from the leg. The leg people usually refer to as the shank bone, you know, that's the popular name, the tibia, and they go over that bone, which people mistake for the knee in the cow, and it's actually the ankle of the cow, and that is called the Tzomet Hagidim. It's the place where all of the tendons actually meet each other. So there's a convergence of tendons at that point, and that is a very sensitive area. Then we move upwards to the actual tibia bone, which is the real leg as opposed to the foot, which was the hoof area and the long leg that came out of it, which is the metatarsus. But going up, we move up past the tibia to the real knee, and that's the Arkuva HaElyona. It's very visible in the camel, which is why we have that nice picture of the camel there. And from there, we go to the thigh bone. The thigh bone, of course, is the femur bone. And on the top of that, you have the Buka de Atma, which is the actual ball that fits in to the pelvic bone. And that we talked about much earlier, because that was part of the Buka de Atma, the Shafmi Duchte, at the very beginning of Elo Treifas. Now, those are the different bones. The terminology in the Mishnah is very confusing, because the Arkuva could refer very generally either to what is the equivalent of the true arkuva, the knee, which is the arkuva that is nikar begamal, as it's mentioned here in the Gemara. So the arkuva that you see clearly in the gamal, that is the arkuva ha'eliona. But the arkuva could also be talking about what is really the ankle. And that in a human, anyway, and it looks that people confuse it with a real knee, but it's not a knee. That's called the arkuva hatachtona, and that arkuva is also known as the arkuva hanimkeret im harosh. And now the problem is how to understand our Mishnah, because the Mishnah seems to be talking about two different things. It seems to be talking about problems in bones, amputated bones, or compound fractures in bones, which the Gemara considers to be the equivalent of amputation, because it was almost impossible and remains so till today to fix a compound fracture in an animal, a four-legged animal. And they shoot horses, don't they? And that's usually why they're going to have to shoot horses. But anyway, the Mishnah does not make clear which arkuva it's referring to. Because of that, we have two fundamental pshatim in how to understand the Mishnah. And there are three variations, but really only two basic pshatim. Let's review them once again. So the Mishnah talks about the difference between an animal's amputation beneath the arkuva, which is kosher, or above the arkuva, which is pasul. What precisely arkuva it refers to, and how far above and how far below, is not very clear at all. And then it mentions separately and additionally, v'chein shenitat sometagid. So this essentially would mean that there's two separate issues over here, and that creates one of the significant problems in how to understand the Mishnah, as we'll see in a moment. So if the bone was nishbar, and we're talking about over here nishbar very clearly from the context, we're talking about a compound fracture in which part of the bone actually has broken through the muscle and skin around the bone, but it's not actually cut off, it's not amputated. So then it depends. How do we define whether this is the equivalent of an amputation, says the Mishnah, im rova basar kayam, so then it's not a problem, and the shechita is still going to be metaher that particular part. Now, he noted it's talking about the aver over here, not about the animal. So this is another question that gets confused here with the tarfus. It's not clear what point the bone that we spoke about originally, where it's an actual tarfus, and here where it's talking clearly about an aver hamiduldal. Is the shechita metaher the actual aver? The imlav, the shechita is not metaher the actual aver. But we learned before that an aver hamiduldal is actually only mitzvahs prosh piyama. It is not really a diarais, even though we brought a pasuk for it before. And that was an asmacht, as we came out earlier. And that is what the Mishnah refers to here. So now, what were the pshatim that we had yesterday? So we had two major pshatim and one variation on a theme. The first pshat identified, and that was quoted in the name of Rav, it was Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, and that identified the arkuva as the arkuva hanimkeret im harosh, which means it's not the knee, it's actually the ankle, or the equivalent of the ankle in the human, so it's the tarsus. And therefore, when it says over here, according to Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, it says lamata, it means immediately right underneath the joint, which is the ankle, there would be no problem anywhere from that point down. And when it says lamala, it means right above that joint, any place above that is going to be trefa. Now that raises a problem, because if it's referring to directly above the tarsus, that's going to be cutting through the tzomet hagidim. And therefore it would be a trefa even if it wasn't an amputation. And that is the problem that Rav Yehuda Amar Rav has to deal with. Why do we separately mention the tzomet hagidim and the idea of the compound fracture, since the two of, or the amputation, which is the equivalent, since the two of them are going to go hand in hand? Now, the way that Rav Yudom HaRav answers this is by saying that you can obviously have the bone amputated without damaging the tendons. And you can certainly have a compound fracture without it necessarily going through the tendon. So what's the problem? These are two different things. To which Ula complained yesterday that that's not the simple meaning of the Mishnah. The Mishnah talks about nechtach, and nechtach means amputated, and therefore it's not really accurate to try to push into the Mishnah two different issues. Therefore, we have this second approach. The second approach was quoted in the name of Rav Hoshaya, and it was by Ula. And Ula said, therefore, I think that the correct way to learn it is what Arkuva are we talking about? Not the Arkuva Nimkeret HaRosh, which is an ankle, but rather the Arkuva, which is Niker in the Gamma, which is the actual knee. And that is, of course, above the leg. And it's between the leg and the thigh bone. And so that means that basically that very complex joint in the patella, which is if that is where it's cut through, that's a question that is far away from the Tzomet HaGidim. It has nothing to do with the Tzomet HaGidim. It is a din in the actual amputation of such a fundamental bone. And therefore, the Tzomet HaGidim falls into a totally different category. And according to me, there's no problem whatsoever. So those are the two main pshatim. Now, Rav Papa yesterday came up with a different version of Rav Yudom HaRav, and according to which, basically, Rav Yudom HaRav agrees completely with Rav Hoshaya. And really, the din is exactly the same. Namely, that when you have something that goes through the thigh bone, it is a trefa. Anything beneath the thigh bone, if it's just a bone, is not a trefa. If, however, something goes over the Arkuva Nimkeretim HaRosh, that's already the Tzomet HaGidim, then you've got this other problem of having cut through the Tzomet HaGidim. So the only real difference between the approach that Rav Papa has is how we use the word referring to Lamala. That's all. So it means that really, Rav Yudom HaRav was referring to the Arkuva HaNimkeret, the Arkuva which is Nikar Begamo, except that he doesn't want to say that when we talk about Lamilamata, it means that anywhere underneath the thigh bone is puzzle. He does not agree to that. And therefore, he explains that the word Lamata does not mean Lamata from the knee. And basically, Rav Yudom learns that when you say lamata, you mean the entire leg. So when it says lamata, it's referring to the bone, which is popularly called the shank bone. So that basically the Mishnah is saying that if you cut off the foot anywhere below the entire bone, the entire leg bone, the tibia, so then it would be kosher. But it boils down to the same thing. It's just the question of how it is that you're using the words. Because Rav Hoshaya and Rav, according to the way Rav Papa is learning, are the same shita. That if you cut off the bone at the bottom of the leg, which is the shank bone, you cut through the Tzomet HaGidim, and that makes the trefa. If you cut it above the Tzomet HaGidim, even though you've cut the leg, it is kosher. If you cut through the thigh bone, which is a much more dangerous problem, as we know from human experience, then that's a trefa. They all made it to that. The only difference is phraseology, according to the way Rav Papa is understanding it. So what does it mean when it says lemata min arkuva? So Rav Yehuda understands lamata min arkuva means not just the arkuva, it means lamata of the entire leg that is actually attached to that bone. So that means the entire leg, the whole bone that is attached to that joint, which is the arkuva elyona, that is kosher and it's not talking at all about a cut through the lake. Masha'inkein, Ula understands it as meaning immediately underneath the Markuva Ha'elyona, that is Nikar in the Gamal. And so then that means that he's coming to say that the Mishnah specifically addresses if you cut through the leg, that it's kosher, which Lamaisa is agreed to by Rav Yehuda. It's just we don't talk about it. And we only talk about cutting through the Tzomas Haginim. But halachically, there's no difference. Now, this turns out to be another one of these Sephardi Ashkenazi issues, lahalacha, because Rashi says over here that we never see that the Gemara, just because of Rav Papa, we never see that the Rav Yehuda Merav that was quoted at the beginning as referring up to the Arkuva HaTachtona, which would mean that anything above the Arkuva HaTachtona, which is the leg, that anywhere on the leg would be possible, we never see that he was tiyuftad. It was Ula didn't like the way that he said it. But it's not as if the Gemara said, Ella, so we have to explain it differently. Rav Papa explained it differently, which means, says Rashi, that we have a very serious shita, according to Rav, that anywhere above the ankle is considered to be a trefa. And therefore, we'd have to be machmer like that. The other Rishonim argue and hold that Lamaisa, the fact that Rav Yehuda Merav, the first version, did not come to a satisfactory answer to the opinion of Ula and the Gemara, never argued on that, of why we separate the Tzomas Hagidim from the amputation, since according to him, it's the same thing. So because of that, basically they hold we only paskin like Rav Oshaya and the Rav Papa version of Rav Yehuda Merav, and we don't have to worry about a break on the leg, which is above the Tzomas Hagidim. We'd only have to worry about a break on the actual thigh bone. Fine. This machlokas translates into a machlokas, as it usually does, in which the Rama is machmir like Rashi, and therefore Ashkenazim have to throw out the whole thing if there's any kind of break above the ankle. And the Sfardim paskin it only if there's a problem in the Tzomas Hagidim, and not if there's an amputation or if there the equivalent of an amputation, which is a compound fracture. Okay, so that is the way that we got up to yesterday, and we understand that as the Gemara asks, let's start from the Mi'ika Midi just to review it once again to recognize how clearly this is the problem. How is there such a thing, Dilumadli Pasik Levechaya? If you cut it all the way up on the top of the leg, there's not a problem. But if you cut it at the bottom of the leg, there is a problem. Does that make sense? And this was the classic answer of Rav Ashi that we've had numerous times. Om Rav Ashi, Trefot Kodmenam, the Midam Eta Lahadadi. What in the world does one trefa have to do with another? It's very naive to think that you can make some kind of conclusion based on your very, very surface understanding of things. Ein omrim betrefot zo doma lazo, sharei chotcha mikan v'meta, chotcha mikan v'choya. This becomes the actual model for the idea that you could cut something all the way up on top of the leg, it won't make any problem at all, and you cut it at the bottom of the leg, and it will make a problem, obviously, because of what's going on there is the very sensitive tzomat hagidim, and this is the example. Now we're up. We got up to yesterday, we're continuing on today. What exactly is the area of the Tzomet Hagidim? Because, look, I mean, the Tzomet Hagidim, I mean, at which point do you call it Tzamud? Where, what we talk about, that they are together, do we mean that they're coming close together, they're actually attached to each other? What are we referring to when we say the Tzomet Hagidim, asks the Gemara? So, Rabba Omar Ravashi, it means the area which is the agarma ulavar. It's where it goes away from the bone. So, these tendons come out of the muscle, and then they run along the ankle to get to the various points where they're connected to the foot, which is the heel bone, and they move that bone. And that's where the musculature is attached to the bone, which is the foot, which is really moved by muscles on the legs that are pulling through these gidim, are pulling on that lower foot, right? So you can see this very clearly, by the way, on a bird. If you take a look at a chicken, and you'll often find sticking out of the chicken at the bottom of the polka. What, how do they call a polka in English? Come on, guys. What the heck? What?
Drumstick. Drumstick.
Thank you. So at the bottom of the drumstick, you'll notice that you have these like sharp pieces sticking out sometimes, right? They look like little sharp bones. And there's like a whole bunch of them that come around the drumstick at the bottom. That is the Tzomet HaGidim of the bird, which is much more complex because it has 16 pieces, not 3 pieces. But in any event, so you've actually seen the Tzomet HaGidim. You've actually felt those gidim in your mouth, and you can tell that it's a gid and that it's not something that is soft and a part of the meat that's on it. Okay, so that's what we're referring to. Now, the question is, when it comes down to the actual joint, and that's the part of the drumstick that you see, is the joint of the leg, of the foot. It's where the leg hits the foot. So then it's really up against the bone. It doesn't really have anywhere else to go. When it comes out of the muscle, it's coming down to join that skin and bone hoofs area and heel bone. So there, the question is, how far do we take it? Is it like only where it's literally at the bone? Is it where it's only beginning to go into the muscle on top, but it's no longer attached to the bone? So it's not clear. So Rabba's pshat over here, which he claims Ravashi said, was that once it goes away from the bone, so the agarma is the bone, the agarma will avar when it starts moving away off of the bone. Rabba Baravuna Amar Ravashi, he says that's not what Ravashi said. He said that it's dafka, the area of the agarma, Ulegav. It's only where it's literally attached to the bone. So that means it's only at the spot where it comes up against the bone directly. Rava Bereda Rabba Baravuna Amravasi, it's the area above the arkuma, then the arkum bone, which we're going to try to identify. Because remember, the what we were talking about, the actual ankle bone is an extremely complex bone, and it's actually made out of 6 or 7, depending how you count it. And that would mean that apparently, at least according to some shita, it's dafka, what's known as the talus bone. And that would mean that you see this. This is the bone that makes a lot of problem in humans as well, where they do the kind of surgery that always makes things worse and has been shown to be never effective, but it's okay. Everybody does it anyway because it's in things to do. But, you know, they do a lot of that stuff on the knee as well. So it would be, according to Rava, Perei de Rabba Baravuna, it would be all of the area that is in front of this arkum bone, which is what you basically would see when you're looking directly at the ankle bone.
Yosef, this trip should drink.
Okay. Now, there was one of the Talmidim was sitting in front of Rabba, and he wanted to say that the Arkuma Gufa is part of the Tzomet HaGidim. And Rabbi Abba said, don't pay any attention to him. That is a tremendous chumrah. And it's not true, because what Rav Yehuda said is, that the area is only that place where the butchers, they usually will make a hole, and they'll put a hook through there to hang up the animal. And that is where the Tzomet HaGidim begins, not at the actual arkuma. And that is right above the arkum, meaning it's like Rava Breda Rabba Baravuna Amravasi's Pshat, which he said before, that it's Ilui arkuma, it's the part that's above the arkuma. So even though this is only the area where they begin to actually connect to the bone, and they continue to go all the way down into the area, which is the heel bone itself, that is not considered anymore to be the Tzomat HaGidim, because at that point, they are as hard as bone itself. They are not sensitive, and they're not the same as Gidim anymore. So the Tzomat HaGidim is the only area that is extremely sensitive, and that's the area where we have a problem. Otherwise, either if it's beneath that or if it's above that, it's not that sensitive. The meaning of the Tzomat HaGidim is exactly as it says. It's where the Gidim are actually connected, and they appear to be one single Gid. So again, where exactly this is and how it relates to the Achilles tendon, many actually learned that that's the reference to the Achilles tendon itself. Again, this is something for a visit to a Beit HaMitbachayim, not for discussions. So that's the Mokom Shagidim Tzomtim, and how far up does it go? Omalu Mirabanan, which his name was Rabbi Yaakov, I can tell you that when we were learning in the Beis HaMedrash of Rabbi Yehuda, he said to us, I want you to listen to me very carefully. Shimu mini milta mimi gava rabba shmili. I heard this from a very great man. I'm not saying this on my own authority, and I'm referring to Shmuel. And he said, the Tzomet HaGidim Sha'amru, Mokom Sha'agidim Tzomtimbo, and it goes all the way up to Mimokom Sha'tzomtim Ad Mokom Sha'mit Pashtim. It's at the place where they start splitting apart. That's the end of the Tzomet HaGidim. And how... Give us an idea, like how long is that, the comma? Omer Abaye, if you're talking about a shor, a big shor, so then you can get a Tzomet HaGidim that is all of four badatis, so it's four etzbaot when it comes to the shiur. Now, this is usually the all of the Rishonim. Big machlokas, because the Rambam brings that it's actually four tfachim, which is incredibly four times as big. And this is in a large shor. What about in a small animal, a daka? A behemoth daka would be a goat, a sheep. So what's the shear over there? Omer Abaye, look, you can easily see this in the area where they're bleating. Blite avit Tzomet HaGidim, where they actually stick out, you could see the sinews themselves, then that is the area. Once they're blii, once they're covered over by muscle, that's not Tzomet HaGidim. Where they're hard, that is the Tzomet HaGidim. If they're already soft, then that means they're too far up. Rakuki lo avit Tzomet HaGidim, where they're thick, they're part of the Tzomet HaGidim. Where they're thin already, they're not. Tzomet HaGidim. Where they're white, they are Tzomet HaGidim. Where they're not white, they're meat colored, then they're not Tzomet HaGidim. So it's easy to point them out. Mar Bar Rav Ashi says they don't have to be white. They just have to be zigi. They have to be less meat looking than normal meat. Once they're zigi, even if they're not mamish white, afagav de lo chivre, they're still included in the area of the Tzomet HaGidim. Now, what is considered to be the damage to the Tzomet HaGidim that is sufficient to create a treifas? Because we said nito Tzomet HaGidim, but what does that mean? Does it mean rov? Does it mean kulo? How exactly do we measure that? So Amar Amemar Mishmei Derev Zvid. Look, there are three basic Gidim in the Tzomet HaGidim. Talat Achute Have, one of them is very thick, the others, relative to that one, are small. So, chada lima v'trei katine, which means that there would be two ways for the Tzomet HaGidim to be mostly ruined. If you cut the thickest one, then you've lost it, because as the Rov Binyan, there goes most of the structural integrity of the Tzomet HaGidim, because the aline, the thick one, had given it most of its strength. But if the two smaller ones were cut, then you've got also a rov, and that would be the rov minyan. So either way, it would be a treifa, whether it's rov minyan or rov binyan. Mar Bar Rav Ashi says the other way, that what Rav Zvid had said was, If the alime is cut, well, it's okay. You still have the rov minyan. And if the rov minyan was cut, the ifsikatine, the two smaller ones were cut, well, you've still got the rov minyan. So in either case, it would be kosher. Now, when it comes to the ofot, it's much more complex. There we have 16 different gidim. And there's shitzarchute have, and this is very complicated. If anybody's got a nice picture to show, but you can actually see this in a drumstick in your own house, very, very complex. If you said you got a picture, please send it on. So, be'ofot shitzarchute have, if even one of them is actually cut through, so then you end up with a treifa. And here, the 16 are not like just all together. They go, when we say that's the tzomet, it doesn't mean that they come all together like in the behema. They actually come all in on the same area of the bone, but they go all around the bone, as again, you can see this in your own home on a chicken. So, it's a treifa. Omar Mab Ravashi, I was once standing in front of my father, Ravashi. They brought him a bird that had gotten hit, and they were afraid that there was a problem in the Tzomatagidim. And he checked it, and he only found 15 undamaged gidim. But there was one gid that seemed to be different than the others, and he carefully split it into two. Napse, and he realized that it's actually two separate gidim that have gotten attached to each other, and because of that, he was makshir. Omrev Yonamarav, when we're talking about the Tzomet HaGidim, and up until now we've been talking about cutting through either the Alime, the Kitinte, when we say that it's treifa, it doesn't need to have all of it cut through. Even a rove could be enough to make a treifa. And what do you mean when you say rove? Well, we mean even rove of echad, which means that according to Rav, what Mar Bar Ravashi said before is completely wrong, because Mar Bar Ravashi said that even if the alime was cut through, it's kosher because you have the rove minion of the katine. And according to Rav Yonam Rav, even ruba shel echad is enough to make a treifa. So I said this to Shmuel, and Shmuel said to me, that doesn't make any sense. Because remember, Rav Yehuda came to learn by Shmuel after his Rebbe Rav was Nifter. And Shmuel said, look, I mean, let's think about this. You've got three different gidim, tlata have. And if one of them is even completely mufsak, there still will be two left. So how in the world could Rav hold that just one, the rove of one would be enough? That makes no sense. Even if the entire one would be cut, it shouldn't make any difference because you would still have the rove. But what's mashma from what Shmuel said is time of the ikatre. He is also saying it's only because you have two that are shalim. But if you wouldn't have two that are shalim, then it would not be roy. But that means that what Rav Yehuda was quoting from Shmuel was different than what Shmuel's other Talmud, Rav Nai, he quoted Shmuel differently. Uplinged Rav Nai, because according to this, if you wouldn't have two completely shalim ones, they would be puzzle. But Rav Nai said that that's not what Shmuel said. Shmuel said that Tzomet HaGidim actually afilu lo nishtayer ba'ela kechuta sarval. It's kosher. That even if the rove of all three were broken, as long as you have an attachment, and it could be an even a very thin attachment, I mean, thin relative to the shear of the gidim themselves, which is the chuta sarval, that's the actual thread that they put through on the top of a sweater to be able to pull it shut. So it's not that thin, but it's much thinner than the actual gid. That would be enough. And you'd have to actually have it completely cut through. But if you have the rove of all three, it would be sufficient. And some say that what Rav Yehuda had originally said, the Igidi Amri has, that what Rav Yehuda Marav said was, my rubo, the rubo of each of them, rov kol echad v'echad. And if it's less than that, then it's still kosher. And in this version, Rav Yehuda said, that after Rav was nifter and I came in and I said this over to Shmuel, Ki amrita kamei de Shmuel, he said to me, well, wait a minute. We've got three. Michte, Tlata, Hava. So even if you were cutting through most of each of them, if you put all three together, I mean, you've still got a very strong connection over here because you've got a third of each one of them. It doesn't mean Dafka a third, but you've still got quite a bit of each one, and that's enough to prevent the tarfus, and that is similar to what Rav Noi had quoted Shmuel in this version because Misayel and Rav Noi, because Rav Noi said that what Shmuel said was that even if you have nothing but the shear of a chuta sarbal of each of them, it would still be kosher. That fits in now with Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, and there's no longer a machlokas according to the Ika de Amri. Okay, now, the next thing that we had in the Mishnah was the din of a compound fracture. And we talked about a bone that had penetrated the skin and the muscles above the bone. And what we said was that if you have the rove is covered with basar, so then the shchita is matir for achila. But if you don't have a rove of the basar, the shchita is not metahir. So now, what are we referring to here? Where is the actual compound fracture? So Amar Rab, look. If this fracture is lamala min ha'arkuva, and that would be the place where it would actually, if you had cut through the bone, it would have made the animal a trefa. So then, im rov ha'basar kayam, so if this compound fracture can heal, which means that it's not completely exposed, and most, and we'll define what we mean by most, if most of the muscle above the bone that had covered the bone before it fractured is still there, then it's actually the whole thing is kosher. The animal is kosher, the aver is kosher, and there's no problem. But if you've got a compound fracture there without being covered by rov basar, then the whole animal is trefa, and therefore it's the equivalent of actually nechtach. So because of that, if it's above the arkuva, then it's going to create this very same trefus that we were talking about in the Mishnah. If it's lamata min arkuva, now we're only worried not about the trefus of the animal, now we're only worried about the aver itself. Because if it's a compound fracture and it doesn't have an ability to heal, it would be basar hamedul dal. So then, and that's how this Mishnah actually interrelates so beautifully with the Mishnayos that we had earlier in the Perek regarding the din of the Aver HaMedul Dal and its comparison to the Aver of an Uber that was Yotze and the difference between Shchita Osa Nipol, if it's Gufo or not Gufo, according to Rabbi Meir, or the dinim of Misa Osa Nipol. So this it flows directly from that first sugya. So if rove of the basar beneath the area where the amputation would not have asid ol behima, so then your only problem is the Avraham Adul Dal. So then if you have rove basar kayam, the shchita is machshirit. But if not, it's an Avraham Adul Dal, in which case the behima is, of course, mutter, but the aver is usher because, as we said before, it's considered to be the basar basada trefa, but that's really a derabbanan, as we said. Shmuel Amar, Shmuel says, I don't care where this compound fracture was. It could be even on the leg itself, above the arkuva. The din is, imrova basar kayam, everything is kosher. And im lav, only the aver is usser, a compound fracture that does not damage the tzomas hagidim is not a problem at all. It doesn't make the animal a trefa. The most that it could be is that the aver would be an aver medulto, and it would be usser because of that additional derabbana. Matkifla Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman said, that's wild, because look, Shmuel, what you're basically saying is that this animal, you're not going to be able to eat the aver, right? So what are you going to do with it? You're going to cut off that area, because it's going to be an aver medulda that we said is usser, and you're going to throw it in the garbage. Now, people are going to see that aver in the garbage. They're going to say, oh my gosh, this was an amputated leg, and this guy's eating a trefa. because it was amputated right through the tzemezeginim. They won't realize that you cut that off afterwards because there was a compound fracture, therefore you couldn't eat that area. So why aren't you gozer that people shouldn't make that mistake? People will say, according to Shmuel, Eiver mimena mutal ba'ashpa u'muteret. It was cut off right there. It's sitting there in the garbage, and I know for a fact that he cut it off, and he's still eating the animal. How could that be? So in order to avoid that, you should say that it's usher. I don't understand. What does this have to do with Shmuel? Rav also said that you have to throw out the Aver. They were only arguing about what place, right? Rav said you have to throw out the Aver, but everything is kosher where it's on the bone, that hoof bone, underneath the Arkuvanim Keratim Arosh. And Shmuel said even if it's on top, but they could say the same thing about Rav. L'Rav Nami, they'll say, oh, look at this. The leg is lying in a garbage pail. And people are eating the animal? No. What I mean is, obviously, Omar Lay, I'm saying, according to Shmuel, it's an Eiver Shechayami Menamutal Bashba. Because according to Shmuel, even if the fracture was above the Arkuva, and you cut it off, and people will say, oh my God, this leg was amputated through the Tzemes Hagidim. That's what they'll think, you know? And they'd be right if it were so. That would the whole animal would be a trefa. That's what I'm saying. I mean, according to Rav, people will understand that, yes, I threw it out, but it wasn't in a place that created tarfas. What's the problem? That's not an issue. So, Achikamina, Eva Shechayam imena mutal bashpa umuteret. You're telling me that this is like a piece of the animal that it needs for its very life, and it was thrown out. How could this not be a trefa? Lamaisa, there was a lot of confusion about who we paskin like in this issue. In Eretz Yisrael, first they sent the message that the halacha is like Rav, and that if lemaisa it is a compound fracture, so then it's considered to be a trefa, even if it doesn't damage the tzemes haginim. It's just an amputation. So they sent a message, the halacha is like Rav. Then they sent another message because, you know, there was a lot of complaining, I guess. No, actually, that looks like Shmuel. Then a little bit later, they sent another message because there was a lot of complaining that they're too mako, you know. This is what happens today. So then they sent another message. Well, actually, the halacha is really like Rav, but it's even that the Aver would be mitame b'masa. It would be a nevela, which is absolutely against the whole sugya that we learned before, and that is that in this case, shechita is not osanipo, and therefore it's not metame as an Eiver min Achai. And of course, Rav Chisda said, what? That is ridiculous. That can't be what they said. I mean, it doesn't make any sense because of what we said before, and he proves it from the Braita that we brought, in which it says, which really was similar to the Mishnah. The Gemara is going to ask, why does he have to bring the Braita? So remember what Rabbi Meir answers in the Braita is, Lo imti harta shrita strefa ota ve'eta eva amedul dalba. Remember that? So if you went ahead and were metire, even the eva amedul dalba, that means everybody agrees you are metire in eva amedul dal. That's because it's a dover shebegufa. But anyway, Rabbi Meir says over here that even he who's machmer on the Aver of an Uber is certainly made that the Aver itself is not Tomei. He says they're beferish. How could they, who are they paskening like? They're paskening against everybody. Where does this come from? It's definitely not Matame ben Avela. That's crazy. Omale Rabba. Hey, Rav Chisda. Why did you have to go looking for this bright? I don't understand. The Mishnah wasn't good enough. You had to look all over the world. Haduri apircha. You needed to look all around to find something to send them to show them that that psak was wrong. You could have asked them from the Mishnah. Everybody knows a Mishnah. The Braita, you'll have to teach them the Braita first. We have the Mishnah later on in the Masechet that we spoke about so many times, that if the behema was nishchata, in a case, remember the case over there was it had both an Aver and Basar. medulla. It was really suffering from an attack. A chunk of muscle was hanging loose, and a leg had been loose. It was dangling. And so they went and they shechted it. And it said in that Mishnah, dig this, man, the meat and the aver hukshiru bidamer. So what do you mean hukshiru bidamer? Means that it is considered to be food and it needs heksher. And the dam of the shechita was makshir it. So obviously it's not metame like an aver menachai. That's all you needed to show them in Eretz Yisrael, and that it was ridiculous to claim that it was metame like an avela. And that was Rebbe Meir. So that means that everybody is meida. The only question was whether, according to Rabbi Shimon, it wasn't considered to be hukshir b'damah, but that's a separate question. But obviously it's food. So Rav Chisda said, I'll tell you, because I knew, because we tried to use this Mishnah before, remember? I knew that if I would quote them the Mishnah, they would come back with the same thing that we said the last time I tried to prove it. Because remember, we wanted to use this Mishnah to prove that an Aver HaMedudal does not have Tumas Nevela. And we said, I mean, how could Rebbe Meir say it needs Heksher? And then we said that maybe Rebbe Meir means that only the Busser needs Heksher because Busser Menachai is not Matame. And then we said, no, it couldn't mean that because it says Hukshiru, which is Lashon Rabim. I hope you remember all of this. And then we said maybe Hukshiru could even mean the piece of meat that was hanging loose, or it could mean the piece of meat that somebody detached from the Aver that was hanging loose. And he needed to mention both because we thought that maybe meat that was originally metame because it was part of an Aver Menachai wouldn't need Heksher, remember? So I figured if I told them the Mishnah, they would say that's how they understand the Mishnah. And it doesn't mean that it was actually not Aver Menachai. So I figured, okay, I'll bring them the Braita. The Braita spells it out very clearly. It wasn't talking about Buzzer. It was talking about directly the Aver itself. So the Mishnah, says Rav Chisda, I knew they were going to be able to tell me can't prove anything from there, the same way that we said before, Kedadachina. We said that a few days ago. Anyway, there was a Maisa that Rabbi Zera, when Rabbi Zera made Aliyah, so Ashkechela Rabbi Yirmiya, the Yosef Ekarla Lash Maitza. So he finds Rabbi Yirmiya Baraba, at least in Rashi, the idea over here is, it could be it was just missing in the Gemara, or he knew it. But anyway, he was sitting and saying over what Rav had said, that if it's a broken compound fracture, that the entire behemah is a trefa, if it's lamala min arkuva, and you don't have rov basa. So Reb Zera said to him, ah, beautiful, Aryoch taught it that way. What? Aryoch? How did Aryoch teach it that way? Who's Aryoch? Well, everybody knows who Aryoch is, because remember that Aryoch was the king of Elasar. And anybody who's a Tolkien reader knows that the king Elasar is a reference to Shmuel, because Shmuel we paskin like only in Dine Mormonis, but not in Isser. So he is Elasar. That's the king. And his original name was Aryoch. So obviously, I mean, that's like, these guys had such incredible sense of connection to things. So we call him the king of Elasar because we only paskin like him, where it's not Dinim of Isser. It's only Dinim of Mamadis. But anyway, at Shmuel, we said exactly the opposite. What are you talking about? Well, Miflat Pligi, remember, Shmuel disagreed with Rav. That was the Machlokas. That's why we said, according to Shmuel, the leg is sitting in the garbage pail. And according to Rav, it's not a problem because only the foot was sitting in the garbage pail. I mean, like, how could you say that Aryoch agrees? Because what you don't know is that Hodar be Shmuel agabi to Rav, that in the end, actually, he ended up agreeing that Rav was correct. And because of that, the halacha really was like Rav, because everybody was made up. Now, what we said in the Mishnah, we didn't really define the compound fracture precisely. We just said, Nishbara etzem v'yatzo l'chutz. So, yes, obviously, if a bone is broken and is broken through, that is by definition in English of a compound fracture. But it is not enough information to define what the Mishnah holds is a compound fracture that is not actually healable and would therefore be considered to be the equivalent of an amputated leg. So let's look at the details. So the bone was fractured. It actually poked through the skin. So im or ubaser chofin et rubo mutar. If you've got, now here it's not just baser, it's or ubaser. Note, so you have skin and muscle covering most of it, it's mutar. If not, it is considered to be not healable, and it's the equivalent of an amputation. So if not, it is osir. Okay, so it depends where it would be, of course. It could be that it would actually be a trefo, or maybe it would just be an avram adulto, depending where it is. Now, when we say chofen as rubo, how do we define rubo? So kiyotir of dimi om Rabbi Yochanan, rubo means rov of yo. So if you take a look at the break, most of the thickness of the bone, so it means, in other words, whatever was cracked open, you're looking at the inside of the bone, most of that needs to be covered. Others learn, no, it's the circumference that's important. The circumference of the bone needs to be mostly covered. And of course, since we have two lashonos, and Rav Papa has conveniently two papas, because of that, he says, therefore, you need both. Hilkach be'inan rov ovyo, ube'inan rov hekefo. Classic Rav Papa. Omar ula Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Actually, skin is just as good as muscle. So let's say that you've got the fracture and the skin is okay, and mostly, and the muscle has been cut through, that we just have skin covering most of it. Is that enough? Said Rabbi Yochanan, yes. Omar like Rav Nachman ula. Well, the correct way that you should have said that is you should have said, V'lei mamar, you can add or to the basar. But you can't just have or, because, after all, the lashon of the braisa is or u basar. And the way you said it, it would be just skin by itself. And I don't know where you get that from. Says Ula, well, I get it from the Braita. My lashon of the Braita is not or ubasa. My lashon of the Braita is or obasa. So therefore I said it's enough even if it's all on its own. Now there's another way that this whole discussion was reported. Ikiri Amri, Omar Ula Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Actually what Ula had said was, you can add or to basar, but he never said you can just plain cover it with skin and that would be enough. So you could have half skin and half muscle. Omar le'Rav Nachman Ula, why do you need to have, say it that way? That was wrong. What you need is mostly basar. You should have said that the or can be mashlim the basar, and that would be a chumra. You can't use half and half, that it's mitzarev. Omar Leh, so Ula said to Rav Nachman in this version that I know that I'm right because I saw an actual maisa. There was a case where a pigeon was actually brought to Rav Yitzchak to Paskin, and it had a broken bone, and it had or that was mitztaref lebasar, half and half. So it was half covered with muscle and half covered with skin. And they went to ask whether it would be kosher to Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Yochanan says it's kosher. So I saw that you can actually be mitzarev. You don't need rov muscle. Said Rav Nachman, that you're bringing as a raya? That's a pigeon. A pigeon is not the same as an animal. Bar guzla kamed. A pigeon, the skin is very soft. People even eat the skin, so it's similar to basar. Masha Inkin, what, the hide of an animal, you're going to treat it like basar? It's not the same at all. Maybe over there, it can't be mitzaref. It can only be mashlim. So I disagree with your psak. There was a case where there were gidim rakim, the otor lakami derava. So now, we, again, the mefarshim over here changed for rabba to rava. So they had, it had a broken leg, but it was a very young animal. And the gidim were still very soft. These were gidim that were going to get harder as the animal matured, but currently it was actually edible. So It was covered by a rove of not real muscle, but these gidim that were soft. So Omar Rava. So Rava said, okay, what's the problem? Why should we worry about this? It should for sure be kosher. First of all, remember that Rabbi Yochanan has paskin that gidim that are going to be hard when the animal matures, but are currently soft, are able to be a chelek in a korban Pesach, where you must have a kezias of the korban in order to be nimna on the korban. If all of the butzer was given away and each piece was assigned to someone, and all that's left are soft gidim, and after all, the korban Pesach is a young animal, and that's okay. You can have extra people that are going to be added to this korban Pesach based on those soft gidim. So if they're good enough for Pesach, they're good enough for me for covering over the broken bone. And don't forget, HaTorah Chasal Mamonam Shal Yisrael. Now, this is Rava back in his conservative rabbi, guys. The Torah is always makbid not to cost money for Jews. So what do you want to do? You want to paskin l'chumra and cost Jews money? You can go pay. Torah doesn't like that. Man, what is going on over here? I thought we already got you a conservative pulpit. This, you're telling me you've got Reb Shimon ben Lakish, who disagrees with Reb Yochanan over there by Korban Pesach. And he says you cannot be nimna on a Korban Pesach based on this. And you've got an Issa D'Oraisa. And you say nonchalantly, well, you know, my Lechashlo, what's there to worry about? What in the world? What's there to worry about? Man, oh man, they might even throw you out of the conservative pulpit at this rate. So Rava shut up. Ishtik. They didn't respond. Ask the Gemara, but why was he Ishtik? Rava Shita all over is that we only paskin like Rish Lakish in three specific cases. This is not one of those three specific cases. The Amar Rava, that Hilchet HaKavata de Rish Lakish only in the following three cases, which does not include the din of Gidim Harakim. So he holds it that long as like Rabbi Yochanan. So what's his problem? What? So somebody's scaring him away by saying, we're going to put out paskvilin about you and that you're a conservative rabbi. He holds that long as like Rabbi Yochanan. Yeah, but here it's different because in the end, Rabbi Yochanan had to agree that Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish was right, as we're going to see later on. We're going to have this discussion in which Rabbi Yochanan finally says, stop driving me crazy. Al takni teni. This Mishnah is a Mishnah, but it's only the Lashon Yachid. I didn't mean to say that it's the Halacha and so on. Okay, fine. So he ultimately gave in to the pressure. Now, there was another case in which there was a compound fracture, in which was a Nishbar Etzem that was Yotze Lechutz, but it had another problem. The Ishtakel Kortita Mine, a piece of the bone was chipped off. So now the question was, did that make it a non-healable fracture? Because I don't know. I mean, like, if you don't have all of the bone material, the marrow intact, so maybe the fact that it's covered by muscle isn't enough. So they brought it to Abaye, to Paskin. He didn't know. And actually, he waited for three regalim, where people would get together, all of the Talmidei Chacham would get together for the Shiurim, for the Kala. He could not get a consensus about what the din was. So Amalei Ravada Bar Masna, said to the person whose animal had this problem with the bone, Zil kameda Rava bereda Rav Yosef Bar Chama. Ask Rava. Rava, our Rava. Rava is the son of Rav Yosef Bar Chama, remember. Ask him because he's got a very sharp knife, meaning he's an amazing surgeon. He knows how to cut apart a halacha. He can parse the din properly, and he'll tell you. So he comes to Rava. And Rava says, I don't know what you're talking about. Do we have the information, la halacha? We absolutely do. It says, Nishbara etzem v'yotzeh l'chutz. It doesn't say anything about an additional problem of chips of the bone, not chips of the bone. If this was an issue, then you would have had to describe that in the event that the bone is whole, then. Did it say that? No. So we don't care. Mali nafa, mali yisi, what do I care? If it's not identified as a problem la halacha, then it should not be a problem at all.